Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker. My colleague Stone Payton is out doing some training today, so I'll be flying solo with my man Alan here. We've got two great guests this morning that we are looking forward to chatting with, Paul Breslin and Diane Crompton, and we'll get to that in just a second. Biz Rocket Radio is a show where we interview and get an opportunity to chat with executives and business owners here in the Atlanta area, get some insight as to successes that they've had, things that they felt have gone well, things that they felt that have been challenges, and all kind of walk away with a better feel for what we can do to pursue success in our own businesses and careers. So this morning, our first guest is Paul Breslin. Paul's a managing partner for Panther Hospitality. He's got a storied background. We had a chance to talk to him a little bit earlier, and I had a pleasure of meeting Paul about a month ago, kind of based around a common theme that we have or interest, which is St. Patrick's Day celebrations, which we'll talk about in a moment. But, Paul, maybe you can give us a little bit of background on you and your company.
Sure. First, thanks, John, for having us, and this is so cool. I am just really impressed with the...
Isn't the board very impressive?
This whole room is just amazing, and all those people in the lobby wanting autographs.
Autographs. I know. We had to get through them. We pushed through, but we were able to make it. Diane, you know, she was a little bit scared for a while there, but she made it. She did well.
I was intimidated.
Yeah, she was.
She was amazing, and they tear in your clothes, and it was just awesome.
And it's exciting, very exciting.
Well, we do have a connection in St. Patrick's Day, and it is great that it's coming up, and we're going to have a lot of fun with shamrocking and the parade and all that. It's going to be great. We'll talk about that later. But Panther Hospitality is our business, started 6 years ago. And really the vision was, as a result of having operated hotels in 10 different states and doing it for over almost 30 years, it was time to go out and do some things on our own and have a little fun developing and assisting other operators. And really, that's what we do every day. We help hotels perform better, and those that want to build hotels, we go out of our way to find great sites and assist them with the right brands, right management company, that kind of thing. So it's fun.
And so you've been doing that for 6 years.
Yes.
Yeah. So you picked a pretty good time in the beginning stages, and then maybe a little more difficult time here in the last few years.
Yeah. The none of the business books you read do not tell you about starting in the worst economic crisis
in like 80 years. Here you go. Come on into 2008, and welcome to the hospitality industry.
Yeah. I don't know if my wife is listening, but she's the one who deserves a medal because we scared her to death with going from this nice, cushy executive role to starting two businesses, actually. Panther Hospitality Holdings is more of our asset company. But it was quite a ride. We felt more pain for our customers than anything. They some of these folks had literally millions of dollars of value disappear. And so in a bizarre way, it created an opportunity for us to be needed more. And so we did diversify and created a few new what I call buckets of or market segments. But one of them that the development side clearly slowed way down, and so we got involved in helping distressed assets and helping being those owner advocates to asset management and such to try to figure out a way to make more money in those hotels that were really just dying. So,
and you made this transition 6 years ago from that kind of Sheraton corporate executive kind of individual and into this smaller partnership, kind of a boutique group, right?
Right.
What was the hardest thing for you in that transition?
The hardest thing was giving up all the perks.
Yeah, the hospitality industry is known for extra perks, not just the salaries and the stock options.
Right. We did. Yeah. You know, we had it is a great industry, and I do teach at Georgia State University, so if any of my students are listening, this is a pitch for the industry, and there is a great career in that, and they know that I sing that song all the time. Dr. Cannon, who's the director at Cecil B. Day School of Hospitality, is unbelievable. We have the best team. We're ranked in the top 20 in the nation, and we just have a lot of fun with over 500 students there. And so the hardest thing was transitioning away from kind of this stability, having a even though every day was unique and different, you knew exactly what to expect. When you become an entrepreneur, as you know, you did it in 2000, right, John?
Yeah.
You just don't have any, and Diane knows, she's smiling over here. She'll tell us later what she does, but it is a just wide open. You don't know what to expect every day, every morning. And there is the days really, someone says, well, how long is your day? And I don't even think it begins or ends.
Is there a clock?
Yeah, exactly.
Start and stop?
You know,
9 to 5, right? Punch the clock and go to lunch, and that was, you know, you're done for the day.
That's it. But it was a great transition, as challenging as it was. It was 10 times more exciting. And it was also, for a hotelier, one of the downsides of our industry is we work a lot of hours.
Yeah.
And so my first 6 months was just pure fun. I mean, we traveled. We went to Europe. We just had a great time. I got to spend a lot of time with my children and the things that we like to do. So that was really exciting. So it was challenging. It was incredibly different from what we did in the past of running. To give you an idea, the last property I left, I was managing director of the Sheraton, which is a fantastic hotel if you ever want a good hotel downtown Atlanta. We had 860 rooms, over 100,000 square feet of meeting space, several restaurants, and hundreds of employees. And it was just a nonstop 7-day-a-week operation. And so it was pretty intense. And that was succeeded from being at the Omni Hotel, and before that, the Hilton right here in Atlanta. But, you know, when you leave that, you have this really network around you of people that are just incredible. We had 12 executives, and those people were just amazing to work with. Going from that to really your own shop with no one, and we've since built up. We now have an office in Washington, D.C. We've got 3 people in our new office here in town, and it's pretty good. It's going well.
So for people who are thinking about making that transition, and I know Diane talks to a lot of people who are going through transition, and so do I, who are interested in you know, going into a more of an entrepreneurial role or something kind of away from corporate America, what might you suggest to them to make that transition as successful as possible?
Well, and Diane will appreciate this because I know she did coaching as well. I was blessed to have a very, very good business coach. And my business coach really started, I told him I wanted to be an entrepreneur and move away. And I had been wanting that for 20 years of my career. But he said, build a plan, literally start 2 years out. And we did. We put up a nest egg so, because we knew it was going to be challenging. We built an infrastructure of people, process. We built a business plan. One of the cool things that somebody turned me on to was the one-page business plan. I don't know if you ever heard of that, mm-hmm. but it really worked. So preparation was the key word. Proper planning, preparation. And we were ready for the storm that we didn't know was coming. We really thought we were going to launch. I had visions of grandeur. I thought, you know, our biggest challenge would be counting the money.
Printing it, right? Yeah, just making sure you get into the right bank account.
Yeah, exactly. But little did we know that the biggest economic crisis would hit us. And the one thing that I didn't really plan on and we were going to do a lot of development on our own was how cool it is to establish a relationship from prospecting to tentative to definite to establish customers. We have built up, I think, some of the greatest customers. We are very proud that since we started 6 years ago, we have... in addition to working with the great brands and, you know, Hilton, Marriott, IHG, Starwood, and we have not only are they associate and partners, but they're clients, we have built a relationship with some of the top developers, and those are our best customers.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's really cool to have gone through that.
What do you see is the future for the high-end hotel and kind of entertainment area?
Well, it's funny that you asked that. That is actually, you know, that was the hardest hit market. The luxury level, the high end was the hardest hit. And what I mean by hardest hit is our revenues declined the most. The Ritz-Carltons were the Four Seasons, Mandarin Orientals. They were probably 70 to 80% of those properties were in financial trouble. They went from being one of the most successful markets to one of the most, and they were untouchable. And all the preceding ups and downs, they did not get hurt. In this particular crisis, they were the hardest hit. They partly because of the AIG effect, we called it. It was the insurance event that got a lot of bad press, but they're the fastest rebounding. So the future is very good for them. They're still, I think we've redefined and understand that there really is, they are the top of the pyramid and they're very small and narrow. So there's not a need for a lot of them. Where we added, I think in Atlanta, 4 or 5 new luxury levels. That was a big jump for us as a city. But it is coming back strong.
I read an article just the other day on the real estate market, the million-dollar homes and above, being one of the biggest jumping areas in terms of recovery. They're recovering. They're way up, where most of the other real estate really across the United States is just not really coming back very well.
And we're like that. We're in the industry. We just spent 3 days in a conference, the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference, which I'm on their advisory board and one of their speakers. And they we just went through 3 days of intense exchange of information, networking, educational, et cetera, and massive amounts of data. And the one of the keynote speakers was Jack DeBoer. He's the inventor of Creative Extended Stay, and he's an icon in our industry. And he said, stay out of the middle. He said, go low, go high, stay out of the middle.
Right. So if I'm an organization that's maybe somebody that you would work well with, what might I look like? What would I be looking for as a customer of yours?
We have 3 target markets, but in the development side, you would be an individual who has successfully developed property. Most likely you've got a portfolio of either real estate assets that you involved in from the ground up. You've liked and always wanted to be in the hotel business for some reason, or you've acquired a hotel for some reason, or you've part of a mixed use. You have a development team, whether it's more construction-oriented development, you're kind of in this very successful. Having come through a rough time, you know right now is the time to get back into it and buy and develop because things are truly coming back. Excuse me. And you... you don't have a person on your team who is true expert in hospitality. And so you think, well, do I go out and spend $250,000 to bring on somebody with salary and benefits and staff? Or can I go out and reach, I can go to the big consulting firms, the HVS or PKF, my competitors, but they're very large structured firms, and we are a very personalized, full service boutique consulting firm. So we reach that middle where we actually become part of your team. We actually feel like we become part of the organization. We understand your strengths and we understand your needs, and then we come in and assist that type of developer. So that's one bucket you look like. Another bucket would be, or another market segment would be, or customer would be someone who has a hotel and says, you know, this hotel isn't rebounding as quickly and as best as I would like it to, and I need some fresh set of eyes to come in and look at it, do an audit, do. Or the other bucket might be that you are a hotel owner and you really don't want to be that asset manager. You want to keep the asset, but you'd like somebody else to oversee the management company and be that intermediary between the owner and the owner and the management company to just challenge them to achieve greater results. And that's probably our sweet spot of all of them. We have the greatest success coming in and overseeing and assisting management companies to become better at what they do.
So being part of the hospitality industry, I cannot imagine the stories that you have to tell. But do you have one? Do you have one that pops to mind that kind of sums up the experiences of being in that industry?
Well, you're right. There's many, and we had a lot of fun, from seeing famous people to going in extraordinary trips and locations. The greatest opportunity I've had, I would say, is seeing the transformation of a very classic, large, famous property, the Fontainebleau. And having been part of that team to see that transition from, kind of an old property turnaround into probably one of the coolest, hippest hotels in North America right now.
So for our listeners who aren't familiar with that, tell us more.
Fontainebleau Hilton. It's now just called the Fontainebleau, but at the time I was there, it was a Hilton product, and it was a 1,200 room oceanfront hotel, three buildings, 26 different retail stores. We had probably 250 docks. We had nightclubs. We had
where is this?
It's in Miami Beach. A lot of the movies were filmed there. Some of the newer movies like Bodyguard and last 15 years, but some of the classic Goldfinger and old movies were there at the Fontainebleau, and it was developed by Mr. Novak back in the 50s, 54, and it was designed by what makes it quite unique in the design is that the building is actually curved. They call it the Chateau building, and it's Morris Lapidus was the architect, and he's since passed away, but he is one of the renowned architects in the industry, and so he and there's quite a few stories in there of how when they had a falling out, when Mr. Lapidus and Mr. Novak had a falling out, Mr. Lapidus built a hotel next door to show up the Fontainebleau at the time. So Mr. Novak said, well, screw you, I'm going to build a hotel that's taller, and took away all the sunshine off his So, those are million-dollar fights.
That's right.
No egos involved.
No. But that's not like putting a bigger, Christmas decoration on your yard. That's pretty much showing up in a whole different level.
But one of the greatest, I think, opportunities is, when you can use your influence in the industry to help others is really cool. And I remember a friend of mine was getting married, my dearest friend up in, and we called in a favor at the Waldorf Astoria, and we were given a suite reservation. Little did we know it was going to be a 12-bedroom suite in the Waldorf Towers.
Oh, my God.
And we had fully staffed butlers, everyone. And we had an engagement weekend that was just like nothing else. And we lived like truly
kings, right?
Kings.
Yeah.
So, you know, with, we kind of joke because we didn't have money to pay to eat up in New York, but we had a great suite.
you could eat from the bar staff and help you out.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff.
Yeah. We had a good time.
Well, that's awesome. Now, I know that you've got a passion in the Irish community, and you are heavily involved there, as I am. But tell us a little bit about your involvement there and the parade that's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, we're real excited about the, I think it's the 118th, or I can't even keep up. It's the longest running parade in the South. I think Chicago and New York may have it on us, but the parade is a passion because when I was a kid, my dad, no matter what, got us up early in the morning on the morning of the parade and said, this is an Irish holiday to celebrate his our Irish culture and heritage. And so we would go in as a family to Manhattan. We lived out on Long Island and just spend an incredible day together. So I just remember as a family how special a parade and celebrating the Irish culture can be. So when Dick Stormont, I think 10 years ago, called on me when I was running one of the hotels, he said, listen, we really want to bring the parade downtown, have a lot of fun. Can you get involved? And we formed an incredible who's who of people to revitalize the parade. Kevin Conboy, Dick Stormont, Monsignor Dillon, Ed Moran, Nancy Logue, and just a great, great group of people. And Ryan Curry and Dan O'Leary is now our current chairman of the parade. And we really surrounded and reached out to just everyone who wanted to get involved. And the parade has just become fantastic. There'll probably be 200,000 people there on Saturday, which is supposed to be a sunny day.
Yeah, 67 and sunny.
Nice, yeah. Nice. And,
not much
and,
better than that.
And we're excited to partner with you on the Sham Rockin' event. We think, you know, during the day you take the family, and then at night when you put the kids to bed, come on out and
yep,
go to the
get
Sham
a babysitter
Rock.
And mm-hmm. come on down.
Come on and have some fun. Yep. So that's going to be a great, great time. And we've had some, you know, Lucky Marietta is a new involved partner. Underground Atlanta, you know, they've gone through a revitalization and they're working on some things that are exciting. They're big involved. They have a festival. They have music. And Budweiser's really stepped up. Coca-Cola is a huge sponsor. Delta Airlines. We've had just corporate America has really stepped up and helped us a lot in Atlanta, Georgia. And William Pate from the CVB is really been a great guy and helping us. They sponsor our dignitary breakfast and make things a little special for those that contribute and come down. So come on down.
Yeah, it's tough in this economy to get that kind of attention from those names even. I mean, the smaller groups, the bigger groups, it's just not, it's a tough time for them. And these are the areas that they're cutting back on. So to have those kinds of groups support that is a great thing.
They've been real good to us and have been for many, many years. I mean, they've cut way back. I mean, in the day, this was a $500,000. Most of the money was given right to children's hospitals or to
CF
and to help organizations like that. But today it's, you know, let's keep the parade going. I mean, our Shamrock Society donors, they individually donate on a personal basis, $5,000 to help each member gives $5,000 and a one-time donation, and then $1,000 each month. I mean, each year to be a sponsor of the parade. So it's a big deal. And as you know, we have an Irish consulate now here in Atlanta. So of course, our Grand Marshal Paul has agreed to our. You know, he leads our Irish consulate. And the first one, I think, in 20 or 30 years, I think.
That, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that's good.
That's great. And, you know, next year falls on a Saturday.
Yeah.
The 17th is actually the day.
Oh, that'll be great. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we already looked at 2012, looking at our calendar, and I was like, oh, my gosh, we're gonna have to do something different there. We're going to have to pull out all the stops, fireworks, and the whole nine yards.
That's going to be great.
And what's your connection to the Irish history? I understand you've got some family and some heritage in the home country.
We do. My grandparents were from Ireland, so we're third generation. And in fact, my friend Kevin Conboy from Paul Hastings has offered to get me an Irish passport. My family still lives in Ireland. We in Donegal. They just until recently, they used to be the owners of the Breslins. Used to own the Abbey Hotel, that's not why I got in the hotel business, ironically, but it's just cool that they own that. But they're still there. Two sisters had five girls, and the other had six boys, and they've kind of moved to Achill Island too, and we're kind of between Donegal and Achill Island, and. We still stay in touch now, especially with social media. And,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great segue.
That's a nice transition right there, Diane. Perfect.
We planned that.
Yeah. And we get to keep up with them on the Irish side. But it is, you know, Ireland's hurting right now, but they're going to come back strong. They've done some things to restructure. And we have one of the strongest Irish business communities in town. If you haven't, you know, the Irish Chamber of Commerce is huge here. If you're interested in the Shamrock Society or the St. Patrick's Day Parade, you can Google that and you'll, you know, get connected. And we have some people give $10. We have some people, you know, like Shamrock, and it's a great way to stay connected, you know. What's your website?
Shamrockin' with no G for a cure.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's our big party. This Saturday also. So lots of things going on this weekend.
Well, I want to thank, you know, I know that we're probably going to run out of time, but I want to thank you, John, and Nadia. She's been awesome. She was great. She was really good.
Paul and Nadia, I know you're listening right now, so we've got some white chocolate pretzels coming back for you. Paul's got a little, he's buttering you up a little
That's
bit.
That's it. So, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we know who really runs
she
everything.
She runs the shop, man. She definitely does. So, Paul, if people want to get in contact with you, either about the parade, about your business, what's the best way to get in communication?
Well, pantherhospitality.com is our website. Please visit that. If you're a student out there thinking of business, hospitality is a great opportunity, great career. Georgia State University, you can reach us on their website as well, gsu.edu. And on the Shamrock Society, it's just shamrocksociety.org. Any one of those, you can connect with me, and we'd love to help you if you want to develop a hotel and need help with your current hotel. So
awesome. So last question, which is one that we ask all our guests, and that is, if you had one pearl of wisdom to send out there to other executives, other business owners, other people that are professionals in the Atlanta area to further their success, what would your take be? What would your pearl of wisdom be?
Let your passion outpace your headwinds. I mean, the headwinds are heavy right now and have been for a while, and don't let that hold you back. Keep that passion alive, because it will carry you through. If you set good goals and have the passion, it'll pull you through these headwinds, because this is temporal, and we will be back and continue to grow. And I think we're going to all be better for it through this tough time.
Thank you, Paul. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Had a great time having you on. Right. You can stick around, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely. Thank
All right.
You.
So next we got Diane Crompton. Diane has got a long business in coaching executives through transition and helping them figure out what it is that they're going to do next in life. And she has started a company called Your Social Media Strategist. And I've had Diane on several shows in the past and known her for many years, and we appreciate you coming in today.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity. This is wonderful. And Paul, you know what? I didn't want to stop listening to you.
Oh, thanks.
She's got that nice voice, you know, very calming and soothing.
It does. I was just drawn in. I was like, tell me more.
Well, Diane, tell us a little bit about your background. The audience can learn a little bit more about you.
Sure. I've got a very diverse professional background. I have over 20 years of combined experience in education, recruiting, having recruited for several different national contingency and retain search firms. And also, most recently, I've been with a human resources consulting group that's international since 2001 and serving in a career coach capacity. During that time, I developed a real passion for social media. I was kind of an early onboarder with all those tools and wrote a book with one of my colleagues back in 2008, Alan Sauter. And then we just did a republish of our earlier book, which came out last year. And that has really stimulated me to kind of hang out a shingle more along the lines of building a business around this area of expertise and a passion that I have for social media and personal branding.
Yeah, I've seen you speak on multiple occasions on, mm-hmm. on the topic, and you're wonderful with it. And the way that you explain LinkedIn and some of these other social professional mm-hmm. / media sites has been great. What advice might you mm-hmm. give to executives that are in transition right now, that they're trying to mm-hmm. figure out, how can I get my name out there? What can I do to differentiate myself so when I go in an interview with Paul, you know, he knows me or can find more about me?
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of key things. I think that the advantages of social media and the fact that this is such a highly transparent mechanism, I mean, there's no reason for anyone not to do their due diligence and research ahead of time. So if I was going to meet Paul, I'd probably do some digging, mm-hmm. you know, Google a search on you, look and see what social media sites that you're already present on, so that when we do connect, whether that's online or face-to-face, I have a greater ability to build rapport because I've done my homework on you as an individual.
Well, I'm going to go delete some Facebook pictures real quick.
Yeah, I won't bring up anything that I saw.
So let's take uh-huh. that a little bit further. Let's say that we're going in to interview with Paul. We want to make a little bit of an impression.
Okay.
What are some of the things that we might want to... You know, we know he's in the hospitality business. Mm-hmm. We know he's got 20 years. We know he's running the business. We know he's got this involvement with the Irish, mm-hmm. you know, society.
Right.
What might we do to dig further?
Well, I think first thing to do is really do a Google search on somebody. It's very easy to do unless someone has a common name, you know. And Paul, with your name, I mean, I'm mm-hmm. sure there are a number of other people with the same naming convention, but we'd frame that up for Atlanta. We'd see if he's on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. which is one of the premier professional networking site. And then through that yield, we would do some additional digging. For instance, let's say, Paul, that you, the involvement you have with the Irish Society, mm-hmm. we might use that as a leveraging point or a point of discussion. Also, do some industry research about the hotel industry, enough so that we could ask some good open-ended questions to provide discussion and also show that we've done our homework. Mm-hmm. Also, maybe you've contributed some blogs. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit about your background, too, above and beyond the formal professional experience. I think it's easy for people to get very literal with what they think they need to talk about, but... I mean, a good example of a great way to build rapport with someone like you is I might take it completely offline in terms of the professional piece, and we might talk about your heritage and your mm-hmm. passion for the volunteerism. Mm-hmm. Maybe I share something in common with that, and we start from there. So it's really determining what that common affinity is and use that to build a common interest and then eventually get to our primary objectives. I think people get a little overzealous with trying to get everything accomplished in one pass. And sometimes you have to let things organically unfold. Mm-hmm. And it might be nothing related to your professional experience. It could be a personal interest right. that allows you to engage with somebody and build rapport with that individual. And it's doing your homework.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not all about you. That's the other thing is I think that... It's very tempting to get into a sales pitch, you know, when you're in transition. But the less it is about that and the more it is about the person that you're trying to engage, the more productive the conversation is probably going to be.
I agree. It's interesting how if you can use the social media to praise your best clients, and there's nothing more honoring than that, or mm-hmm. or recognizing someone in your organization who's gotten an award and promote them through that social media. It's really cool. I mean, hotels are, it's absolutely the hottest thing right now.
The social media.
Oh, my goodness. Uh-huh. Not just from an employment and personal development side, but the new generation today, they don't go to the Hilton.com. They go and Google, and they go to their own social sites and
see what's being said.
They post on the wall, I'm going to Destin, what's the best place?
So Diane, if you're, let's say you're on the other side of the coin and you're trying to create a profile that might be attractive to somebody, if they're, because they're going to do the same thing to you to figure out who you are,
right?
And they find you on LinkedIn and Facebook or whatever else. What do you, let's start with, what do you want to put out there? What are some of the things that you want to let people to know about?
Well, the first plan of attack, I think, is nobody can let their guard down anymore, regardless of your, where you fall in the age bracket range, and assume that by not having some kind of an online presence that you're going to get by. I mean, it's just no longer acceptable. In fact, it could be something that's a real ding against you if someone goes to look you up and you either don't have a robust or defined presence, or you might even have something unflattering that's not professional in nature.
Right.
So the first thing to do is to just realize that you need to stake your claim, you know, on an online presence. And then to be strategic about it, too. And that involves doing your homework. So meaning that you're going to have to communicate yourself in a way that supports your personal brand and your professional brand, your areas of expertise, your industry, and also to utilize all the tools that are out there for you. I think there is also a little bit of a kind of a build it and they will come approach when it comes to establishing an online presence. And I think that's actually one of the things that people leave behind in terms of opportunity. Just having a good LinkedIn profile does not necessarily mean you're going to build traffic or build a following. It involves more than that. It involves seeing who your best business partners could be, who are the key referrals that could help you get into business. Also, what about listening? You know, what about being a member of some particular groups where it could build your own subject matter knowledge and expertise?
I'm taking notes.
Yeah.
he's going on.
This is great advice.
We have to re-listen to this thing. I'm good to go.
And also paying it forward, too, because that's a big part of it. The more you can be helpful to others and share good content, the more it'll enhance and support your own personal brand.
You mentioned brand a couple of times, and I wrote that down to ask you. So tell me more about personal brand. I mean, people think of brand and they think of Coca-Cola and IBM and these companies. Mm-hmm. And I'm just me. How do I actually create a brand, right?
Well, I think the beginning is knowing what you're bringing to the table. And this is where I've coached executives and professionals before. I mean, unless you know what you're trying to sell, it's hard to put a quality product out there. So some of this might involve some self-reflection. Having a well-thought-out resume does not necessarily mean you're well-equipped to describe your personal brand. So that might involve some initial assessments, some reflection, working with a professional coach, too. And typically, that personal brand relates to your unique value proposition. In what way you're going to provide value to the people that you're going to be aligned with, whether that's an employer or your business partners or people that are referrals. And it involves also your unique skills and your attributes that set you apart from someone else who might have a similar background. And then being able to clearly define what that is and communicate that. Verbally, through your collateral, through your social media tools, and really to strive for consistency, you know, with all those things.
So it helps to kind of give you a clarity of what your purpose is from a business perspective, what you want other people to see you as. And then once you know that, it's a whole lot easier to actually use these social media sites to actually get that message across.
Right, exactly. And this is actually a professional challenge that I see with myself being in the social media space. I get some pings of interest from either individuals or organizations where the immediate kind of knee-jerk reaction is that, well, look, we need to be out there. You know we need to be using social media, so we want you to help us with that. And my first question is always, well, what's your driving objective? You know, what are you trying to achieve? Who's your target audience? Who are your key competitors? You know, what do you what do you think you need to accomplish and in what time frame? And what are your resources for doing that? Because unless that's the pre-work, then you're kind of spamming your message out there without a strategic approach, and you won't get as good a return on investment.
Yeah, the message becomes diluted by the other message. It's almost right. like a positive taking out a negative. So
right.
tell us more about your business, your mm-hmm. company. I mean, what would a social media strategist actually
do? I know,
it's
a mouthful. I
yeah,
know.
It's great. But it's yeah. great. It's very interesting. What would you do? You had a client come in. Mm-hmm. What's your objective behind it?
Well, let me give you a couple of examples. I think it's better to illustrate it that way. And I can look at this from a team approach or an individual approach. So let's say I'm working with a professional who is just not confident that they're being perceived in their best light and they need to build a broader audience. I might work with that individual on helping to hone and define their personal brand and then looking at their acumen and comfort level for communicating that through traditional and non-traditional means like social media tools, and then also doing an online audit. I think that's very, very helpful at the front end. You know, what's broke in need of repair? You know, do you have any voids and deficiencies? Are there any inconsistencies? I mean, Paul, you and I were kidding, and you were saying, don't look at my Facebook. You know?
So electronically, you'd undress us, basically. You'd
right.
yeah. pull everything
we kind
down.
Of pull the
right?
covers off,
yeah, you
right.
you pull it all aside, and you go, all right, what do you got?
Yeah,
what's
that's
going
right.
on?
We want to know what's out there. And in a lot of cases, it's nothing bad. It's just that it's not as powerful or consistent as it needs to be. Now, particular to working with teams, I mean, that's an ideal audience for me. Let's say there's an organization that has a sales force that there are some inconsistencies with how they're promoting corporate products and services. There's not a strong sense of definition around how they are using social media. So, in other words, the company knows that the employees are quote unquote out there, but they don't really know what they're doing, and they're not really auditing that. So that's kind of a quality assurance issue, because I think it's powerful for an employer to allow and facilitate employees being online, but then to really build that revenue stream, you need to provide some guidelines around how to promote products and services, maybe even offering up some company speak. You know, how do we describe our organization? And also talk about some do's and don'ts. And I would come in and work with the organization in partnership with them to help define what that onboarding process could look like with the employees, work on crafting their messaging, and also do some hands-on training and coaching, too, for what is this going to look like on a daily basis. And that can be through web-based coaching. It could be one-on-one. It could also involve key leaders within the organization that are just not well branded, and frankly, they're the face of the company. So
right.
that's a quality assurance issue.
So starting with the top and kind of working down,
yeah. And these kind of implementations are really, I think, only effective if there's an endorsement and an understanding and kind of a walking the talk on the part of the leadership team of the company. In other words, if you've got a leadership team that's reticent to have professional profiles on themselves online, what is the incentive for someone who's more junior in the organization? You know, it kind of creates a disparity.
Right.
So I think it needs to be an onboarding process for the organization.
What about mistakes? What are people doing mm-hmm. that are just like, oh my God, what are you doing? You know,
uh-huh.
and it happens all the time. You're going, these people mm-hmm. aren't thinking. What are the big mistakes you see?
Well, a couple of common things that I see, and I think some of this is due to the anonymity of the medium, where people get overzealous with what they want to have accomplished. In other words, they may have applied to a job, or they want to form a connection with somebody, and let's use LinkedIn as an example. And so they have a very overzealous approach. They might contact somebody and have something equivalent to a resume, and actually give the impression that they're leaving the responsibility up to that person to shepherd them through the process or get them to a key decision maker. It's kind of breaking a lot of networking rules, you know. So really the same rules of thumb apply with online networking as they do with face-to-face. In other words, it's probably going to involve multiple passes. You may talk nothing about your final objective in that first pass. It might be about building a common connection so that they just are engaged enough to get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So patience and using appropriate etiquette, I think, is one thing. Another thing is inconsistency in terms of branding, too. In other words, I've met with people who, some really top-level executives, and they've got really thin, diluted profiles online, and and it creates a disparity in my mind. It's like walking up to someone at a function, and you think, gosh, they have such a strong presence, and you shake their hand, and you think, whoa.
Yeah.
This is confusing to me. So it creates that kind of confusion. So I think that professionals need to walk the talk, too, in terms of the way they're portraying themselves online,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that they, no matter where somebody goes to find out about them, whether that's through, Paul, you're a good example. You're someone who's out in the public eye. You've done a lot with the local community. You've got a good public brand. Wherever someone goes to look for you or John for you, it's all the same good, supportive, relevant on brand material, and it creates a very strong, kind of Teflon brand, you know, so to speak. And then finally, just making sure that you are consistent with your engagement. You know, having worked in the career management space for many years, I think there's often a knee-jerk reaction to building a network. And the reality is,
It takes time, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, and none of us has that luxury anymore. I mean, none of us can afford to cobble together a network in a time of need. We need to instead say, well, this is a framework that I need all the time. And I need to nurture and maintain that network because these are people that are valuable to me no matter where I am professionally in my life. So to stay engaged and present as much as possible with that network.
A professor once told me a long time ago, you got to make deposits to build good relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Not
take too many withdrawals. And if you mm-hmm. start taking withdrawals prior to the relationship even being made, it doesn't usually go very far. So
Yeah, that's true.
What are the kinds of sites? What are the kinds of places that, let's say, somebody's getting transitioned or maybe they're looking for a position, or maybe they're just an executive in a company that wants to create a brand and a presence, and they want to lead by example. Where should they be looking first?
Well, bar none, the top site, and I usually say if you're going to do one thing, do this, then it's LinkedIn, because it's strictly professional. It's pretty buttoned down. I've worked with a lot of leaders who are reticent just due to privacy concerns to put themselves out there. But LinkedIn is so buttoned down. There's so much.
How do you mean by buttoned down? What does that mean?
There are inherent obstacles built into the network in terms of people being able to engage others. It's not as easy as some of the other social media sites. So any kind of concerns about privacy or not showing your public profile are really unfounded. Mm. I mean, you're really leaving kind of virtual money on the table if you look at it that way. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage all professionals to have a well-constructed, optimized profile on LinkedIn and to really explore leveraging all aspects of the site. And that includes not just optimizing your profile, but it's also taking advantage of doing strategic searches, participating in discussions and groups, sharing good content for others, keeping your network updated, and also we were talking about establishing. I was talking yesterday with some executives about establishing a company page on LinkedIn. That's a great idea if you've got a company, because LinkedIn is now borrowing some of the qualities of Facebook's, people can now go in and endorse the company.
Mm.
Isn't that great? You know, so a consumer might say, well, gee, you know, that looks more intriguing to me because look at all these people that have said this is a great organization. So I think LinkedIn is absolutely the number one choice. And I think the numbers are now up to 90 million members worldwide.
Wow.
Now, Twitter and Facebook are definitely worth mention, and I don't know how to put one first or second in that group. I'm actually more involved with Twitter, so I'm going to apply some subjective information here. But Twitter's not for everybody just because it can be fairly time consumptive, but it's a wonderful amplification tool for any of your other existing social media efforts. I mean, and that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, I have a question in that regard. Can you just be kind of a part-time tweet? Can you do that?
Well, no, not to fully leverage it. And actually, that interestingly enough, when we look at Twitter, one of the seductive aspects of Twitter, I think, is anybody's ability to build a following fairly easily by sharing good content, by paying it forward and listening effectively. And it's also, unlike the formality of LinkedIn, people are very approachable. I've heard many stories of people who have formed relationships and close communication with real thought leaders, industry thought leaders, via Twitter that would never have been possible any other place. But the reason I say no is that by Twitter standards, if you're kind of what I call a bystander in the Twitter stream, then you're probably not going to build a following, which is really part of the objective of Twitter, is not just to engage others and pay it forward and follow others for your own benefit, but also to have other people say, well, you know what, I like what you're saying too. And there's really no point in being out there unless you can make it a daily routine.
If you're a company, should you hire somebody to do this full-time?
You could. And actually, that's something that's being done. But there's also been, I've read a number of blog posts about this kind of need to be vigilant, you know, in terms of hiring the right kind of people for that. Because the great thing about anything that's put online is it really broadcasts to such a huge audience. And it's so assertive. The bad thing about utilizing these tools is that once it's out there, you can't take it back.
Right.
So there's a monitoring, and some clear standards need to be in place in terms of who those people could be. You know, we almost might call them brand ambassadors on the part of the company. There has to be a high level of trust, some protocol about how this is handled. And also someone probably does need to be minding the store just to make sure that nothing is put out there that could really tarnish the organization's brand.
Right.
But the interesting thing is too, and with you being in the hotel industry, Paul, that there's the empowerment of consumers has really been amped up because of social media. So someone who's even moderately dissatisfied with, let's say, a hotel experience could go ding a hotel's reputation just by going out there to Yelp or some other social media sites. And so there's a need for monitoring the universe to ensure that negative banter doesn't get out of hand, you know,
There's a new application that the brands use for the franchise, for the owners, that sweeps every day, like 20 times a day, the information. So it's kind of an internal search for anything that's negative so that it looks for these things. Now, the good in that is it's actually made us better hoteliers because we're closer to the actual consumer.
It closes the gap between the company and the consumer, which is very powerful.
Very powerful. And we need that because the hotels need to, you know, these intermediaries like hotels.com and these travel consumer sites that came about through the technology, they became a wedge between the customer and the hotel.
That's a good point.
And now this social media is allowing that person to say, hey, I don't need to go through Expedia to tell you about my stay. I can just tell you right in your
You know what's interesting on that is not only do you have a situation where you'll know that is occurring, you can possibly address it if it's something that's just not true, or you can go to that person directly, even better, and say, I'm sorry you had this experience. And they're going, wait, how did you even know I had this experience? I posted on something not on your website.
Right.
Exactly. And it's very powerful to be able to be proactive in regard to this, because you can more effectively put out fires. I mean, talk about a great customer relations aspect of social media. You know, the ability to listen and monitor and also maintain, you know, your customer base more effectively has really been powerful, I think.
It's cool. We have one hotel we asset manage and put, when you make a comment on your guest comment card, and it immediately gets posted on our website for the next guest. So it's almost live. It does have there is a trusted review of it. But if what's really cool is, and it's transparent and it gives you some credibility, is that if something does go wrong, we show that, but then what we did about it.
Excellent.
Because, you know, you really need to have, let people know. And that's where you really build brand loyalty, is when you take care of the customer that had a problem before.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's so many, I mean, in keeping with what you're saying, Paul, when we look at the application for this, it's just endless.
It really is.
So, so Diane, here's the problem is that now that you've been a member and a guest on Biz Rock Radio, the phone right now is ringing at your office, and you can't stop it. It's just going to keep going.
Oh,
and
well, I hope that's a good problem.
He didn't say that for me yet.
No,
it will.
It was happening already.
It's all right.
So, Diane, people want to get in contact with you. What's the best way to reach out?
Got a couple of ways. You can actually call me on my preferred line, and that number is 770-401-1663. That is my direct line. Also, please check me out on social media, because I think that will give you a little bit more of information about me. And I've got profiles on LinkedIn, Facebook, and I also have a Twitter account, and share lots of good content via Twitter. At my handle at Twitter is Di Crompton.
And it's C-R...
O-M-P-T-O-N, and it's just D-I, Di Crompton.
All right, cool. So there you go. All right, so we'll finish up with your pearl of wisdom.
Oh, my pearl of wisdom. I actually have listeners. 2 points to share
All right,
here.
Great.
One is, and this will probably segue back to my earlier point, it's never take your network for granted. You need to nurture and feed your network if you really want to be able to call on it. And also, take control of your personal brand and use the power of social media to assert, communicate, and control the way you're perceived professionally.
There you go. That sounds like you're a brand. You just branded yourself.
There you go.
Thanks.
Like,
oh, and John, I'm sorry, neglected to mention, I just got my website formalized, and it's brand new. So please have your listeners also feel free to check me out by www.yoursocialmediastrategist.com. I'd be glad to connect with them there as well.
All right. Well, man, great show, guys.
Great.
I appreciate
it.
Thanks so much, John.
Yeah,
thank you.
Good stuff.
And Paul, great meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
Great. So until next week, please remember the St. Patty's Day Parade on March 12th, downtown.
Right at the Hyatt there at Baker, and it starts at Baker and goes to Underground.
So just look for 200,000 people or so, just hanging out, waiting for a parade to come by with drinks in their hand and beads in their neck, and who knows what.
Yeah, the best way is get off at Peachtree Center, come on up the escalator, any one of those four escalators, and you just come right out, and you'll be just amazed to see how it transfers downtown into. And everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's
Day. There you go.
Day.
Everybody. Even
Saturday.
The Scots are Irish.
That's right.
And then Shamrockin's this Saturday at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater. And we are expecting not 200,000 people. What we're going to have a time anyway. So until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.